Yeah, I'm not going to play that bumper music because it drops the microphones down. Yeah. You know, it dips the microphones. If you've ever listened. Something's wrong. We got to fix it. So I'm going to do this instead.
Oh. I like that music.
You like that?
I do.
That's... I don't know if it's dipping the microphones or not. We'll have to wait and see. But...
sit out on the porch. Let the sun shine on your face.
It's, you know what it's called?
Gregorian chant?
No, it's called angel singing.
Oh.
All right, bring us
in. I think they're people. All right, welcome to No Apology with Emily and Chris. So glad you are with us. Another show, and we're going to be laughing louder, digging deeper, and living larger once again. And hopefully that will encourage you to do the same. Or as Mike Shaw says, go and do likewise.
I have the longest palindrome in history as part of the Salvaged by God deep dive.
Really?
And yeah. And
I'm surprised you know what that means. That makes me very happy.
I'm glad.
You used a big word.
Mike Shaw will be by with Right On Way Off, but we start like we always do. Yes. It is that time of the show. It's Emily's monologue, which we call the Granny Rant. Here's Emily. Da, 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 da.
Yeah, and St. Patrick's Day, it is right around the corner. That's what I want to talk about, a.k.a. Feast of St. Patrick. There's feasting involved. So who doesn't want to be a part of that, right?
Well, yeah, just look at me.
It's another American holiday. And unfortunately, even though it's specifically Christian, it's been the origin of it has largely been forgotten. So that's what I want to talk about. Our kids came home from school one day. This was several years ago. And I asked them, what'd you learn today? And they said, well, we learned all about the myth of St. Patrick. And I'm like, what? You know? So I don't know exactly what was said or what was taught in the classroom. It doesn't really matter because either way, regardless, my kids came home with the idea that St. Patrick and the whole thing around it was all just this mythical thing. So we spent the rest of the day learning about the real St. Patrick. And that was when we started homeschooling. And the rest is history. It's a whole nother story. That I'll probably talk about another time. Anyway.
My microphone is bad. It's bad microphone. Bad.
You just sit in the corner microphone and think about what you're doing.
Are you telling me the St. Patrick story, which I know you're about
to
share?
Yes.
Are you telling me that was the very first homeschooling foray for our family?
It was another nail in the coffin of public school for our kids. Right, yeah, was a big one.
Was that the day one of homeschooling?
No, it wasn't the day one of homeschooling.
I remember coming home from work on day one of homeschooling.
And it wasn't St. Patrick's Day.
Okay. All right. Now, this is an awesome story.
Yeah, it really started shifting to, we're going to teach our kids what we know that they need to know. All right. So if you've never heard the whole Christian origin of St. Patrick's Day, buckle up. Here we go. Because Christ is at the center of the holiday. St. Patrick, who was he? Of course, now we know him as a saint, but he was born in Britain, what was then Romano Britain. Rome ruled over it at the time. It was the 4th century. His family was very, very wealthy. His grandfather, I believe, was a priest and his father was a deacon. So he was raised in the faith of Christ. Well, one day some marauders from the island of Ireland came through, raided the place, and they actually kidnapped Patrick, took him back to Gaelic Island of Ireland. And he lived there as a slave for like 6 years. He was 16 at the time when he
16.
Was kidnapped.
Bummer.
He went on to, because he was educated, he went on to write and chronicle about his life. And so that is recorded. It's called The Declaration. I've never read it. I would like to, though. I'm assuming it's in his native tongue, though, which would be
St. Patrick's Declaration.
Yes. St. Patrick wrote Declaration. And it's a story of his life. So in that, he's a slave for like 6 years. During that time, even though he was raised in the faith, this was also the time while he was a slave in Ireland when he came to know the saving grace of the Lord Jesus Christ. He met him and surrendered to him. It's where he became a Christian. One day he was praying and the Lord told him, flee, run, go down to the shores. There's a boat there There's a boat there waiting for you and it will take you home. Because as you know, Ireland and Britain, they're not all that far apart. But to get there would be impossible without a boat. So he runs down there. Sure enough, there's a boat. He makes his way home. All right. He then goes into the priesthood and decides to become a missionary. And as a missionary, as a Christian, as someone that wants to share the gospel, those violent raiders and marauders on the island of Ireland just stuck in his heart. And he's like, I got to go back. I have to go back and share the gospel with these people. And that's exactly what he did. He went back, he shared the gospel, and Christianity became the religion. It took over and people accepted Christ. And the great thing about that is, you know, we're remembering it and we're celebrating it even to this day. American holidays do have their foundation, the original ones, they have their foundation in the gospel of Jesus Christ. We talked a little bit about that when we were talking about Valentine's Day.
Yes,
you know?
I remember Valentine's Day.
And so when you take God out of the public square, when you take God out of public schools, you know, teachers are left with nothing to teach other than the cartoon St. Patrick and, you know, the shamrocks and the clovers and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. They can't mention God. You know, so how do you teach that?
I don't know.
And not be able to mention God. It's no wonder the kids came home thinking it was all just mythical.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I was like 9 years old before I realized it wasn't all about green beer. You know?
I know, right?
Here's tells you a lot about my neighborhood, but
yeah.
Still.
So here's the deal. Why do we celebrate it on March 17th? Well, that is the day that St. Patrick did actually pass away. That is the date of his death. That is why it was formally he's celebrated on that day.
I thought that was the day he drove the snakes out or something.
No, the snakes being driven off the island, there never really were snakes on the island. As you know, when you're on an island, not a lot of wildlife traverses to and fro.
I feel deceived. So, I feel duped.
But no, you're not duped at all, because okay. With ushering in the gospel of Jesus Christ, that old serpent, Satan, he was indeed driven out. He had to leave. And so that's where you get that illustration to share the Trinity in the gospel, the Trinity of God. That's what's really interesting, because I get the idea that St. Patrick wasn't just, you know, saying, Jesus loves you, you know, and if you would just come to him and give him your heart, you know, no. He was teaching these things like the Trinity, and people were asking serious questions. What do you mean? How can Jesus be God, but God is one? So he used the clover, the three-leaf clover, each individual leaf, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, but yet it's one thing. Mm-hmm. It's one altogether. And so that's what really, you know, the island being so lush and green, it anchored.
Well, that
it
makes
anchored
sense
with
now.
The people. Yeah. So today it's really been largely reduced to just celebrating the Irish culture,
okay.
Which was nothing wrong with celebrating the Irish culture. But as a nation, why would we do that? It doesn't unify, right?
Right.
It's Christ that unifies. When Christ is at the center, that's how come, as a Norwegian that you are, you can celebrate Saint Valentine, because it's all centered around the gospel.
Right.
As Norwegians, we can celebrate Saint Patrick's Day, because what happened, what they're honoring, what they're celebrating on Saint Patrick's Day is unifying. It's something that all men either have experienced or they need to experience it. And so through Christ, it unifies. And that's where, you know, as America being the melting pot, that's how we're unified, is through Christ. If we're just going around, well, we're going to celebrate you because you're Italian, and we're going to celebrate you because you're Irish. Like, I don't, that's whatever. Mm-hmm. But I can look and celebrate, you know, the total transformation of the island of Ireland because of the gospel of Jesus Christ, because, yay, I was transformed too.
I get it. I get it. It's making sense.
Yeah. So that's what happens, though, when you secularize what is supposed to be holy. It just becomes random, meaningless absurdity. And it's mythical, and it's leprechauns, and it's pots of gold, and all this stuff that really doesn't even have anything to do with anything.
Question.
Yes.
If somebody said, well, then why do we celebrate St. Patrick's Day? Mm-hmm. What would be your short answer? Because he was a missionary who brought the Trinity up? How did he become St. Patrick?
Well, he
He used the three leaf clover to show the Trinity.
Yeah.
What else did he do?
I mean, he
apparently
was
the snake thing isn't happening now.
He brought the gospel of Jesus Christ to the entire Irish people. I mean, hello. And then, of course.
And so that's celebrated on the 17th of March because he passed away on the 17th.
On 17th of March. And,
I got
and
it.
The,
I got
and
it.
So the Irish immigrants, when they came over, brought that celebration with them that, mm-hmm. that you know, of course, it morphed a little because it's not, you know, whatever. We're kind of, like I said, the melting pot. But every group of people, Germans celebrating Martin Luther, every group of people has that missionary that somewhere over the course of history brought the gospel to the people, you know,
so
from
we're gonna
somewhere.
Have someday a Billy Graham day.
I don't know.
I would think that.
I don't know. I don't know. But anyway, that's what I really wanted to focus on. Chris, do you remember? Because this is an example of the detriment when we forget our Christian heritage and what is really behind the things we do and why we do them. Chris, you and I were doing the morning show in Arizona,
mm-hmm.
and it was St. Patrick's Day, and I was telling people then about St. Patrick's Day and who he was and all that stuff, yep. and this lady yep. called the show. Yep. You know where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
She was Hispanic.
Yep.
I wish I could remember her name. The call screeners would always get the name, but I don't remember this one. But anyway, she called, and she said, "Thank you for telling me what this St. Patrick's Day is all about." She said, "We're immigrants. We moved from, I don't remember what South American country that they moved to the United States from." She said, "But I got here and I just get this note from the teacher saying the kids are supposed to wear green and something about leprechauns, and they go to school and they're punching each other in the arm." And I'm just like, "What in the world is going on?" You know?
Yeah.
And when she heard us tell the story, it all clicked. It all makes sense. It all made sense.
Yeah.
Now she knows why we celebrate. Now she wants to join in the celebration. She's a Christian. She's a Hispanic. And she can join in that celebration because she, too, as a Christian, understands the great need for the gospel and the transformation that takes place.
I remember that call.
So, yeah. I mean, that's what happens when you secularize what's meant to be holy. It just becomes idiocracy.
There is so much secularization of the Christian heritage of America to the yeah. point now where lefty wants to make it to where we're all lying.
Right.
When we point out the Christian heritage, we're just liars.
Right.
And it just it makes me sad.
Yeah. And they want to point us back to, you know, the Druids and the.
Oh, the Druids.
You know, all these ancient cultures that.
Anything to undermine the Christian worldview.
I'm sorry, but, you know, people that were living through the 8th century, 9th century, 12th century, 15th century. They didn't have a lot of information on the ancient Druids. They really mm-hmm. didn't. So what they did really wasn't based on that and the pagan war. I mean, they came out of paganism. All, you know, mm-hmm. all countries did. They came out of that paganism, and it's a really good thing. So anyway, Psalm 77:11. That's the verse that I just want to share with you today. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old. And that's what we have to do. We have to remember, remember, remember. God tells us that over and over in the Bible. Remember, remember, and share those and pass those on to the generations that come after you. Because it really is good for us to share the good things that the Lord has done. So
yeah, awesome.
Yeah. That's my granny rant. Celebrate St. Patrick's Day. It's coming this Sunday.
Yeah.
However you will, and just remember, it's about the gospel of Jesus Christ reaching around the world into all the four corners. So it's a really good yeah. holiday to celebrate. All right, turning now to our Salvaged by God deep dive. Chris, are you ready?
Before we do that, yeah. do you want to hear my impression of the Norwegian Godfather, since we don't have a patron saint?
Okay, sure.
You know this joke.
Yeah. I mean, your heritage is Thor. You had to come out of that whole
and
thing.
And Vikings, yeah. yeah. A lot of yeah. pillaging. A lot of pillaging in the background.
A lot of marauding yeah. back then, yeah.
Yeah, full-blooded Norwegian, both sides, yeah. both parents, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Norwegian Godfather, you know mm-hmm. the movie The Godfather, right?
Yes.
And it's Italian,
yes.
it's mafia. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, the Norwegian Godfather, he's little known, but he has a famous phrase as well.
Okay.
It's, make me an offer I can't understand. Get it? Instead of I can't.
I do get it, and I can do that, actually. It's not that hard to do.
Oh, that's an oldie but a goodie. Hey, before I get into the deep dive, I want to talk a little bit about an email I received.
All right.
Yeah, from a friend of mine who's in the industry. Yeah. I'm going to call him Tony. We're going to protect the name of the guilty.
Okay.
Tony is now living in Wisconsin.
Living in Wisconsin. All right.
And he said, your microphone flag, Chris. I finally caught your show on Rumble. I got to ask, that microphone flag, is it that low budget? I got to be honest. It looks like you photocopied something and couldn't cut it straight. Well, Tony. By the way, for those of you who don't know, when you put something on your microphone there, it's called a flag.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a piece of paper that I sent through the copy machine, and I did cut it, and I scotch taped it to it. You know why? Because that's how low budget we are, and that's how I don't care.
We are that low budget.
Yeah.
It's maybe not as crooked as what you think it might be, because it curls a little bit, and your microphone is not, like, centered square on. So.
Well, we're always getting new listeners, and if you're audio listening, you don't see the Rumble or the YouTube, that's fine. Don't waste your time. I'm not much to look at. But when we did this recently, and many of you new listeners, new viewers may not know, but I used to do what was called the Bible Idiots deep dive. Over Emily's shoulder, you can see the movie Bible Idiots, and that's what we were known for. Well, we switched that teaching platform to Salvage by God. And so I just got into the mode of wanting to promote Salvage by God. And so search Salvage by God wherever you get your content if you want to hear sermons. That's what they are. It's a teaching platform, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Emily takes off her glasses and holds her face. Oh,
no.
Not again.
We're good.
So anyway, so that's all we're trying to do is we're just in the Salvaged by God deep dive is simply trying to take a minute and get into the Christian walk. And many times we want to get into scripture. We want to do other things. But Salvaged by God deep dive is about the Christian walk. And I have what I consider to be the world's greatest, longest palindrome.
Okay.
And that is, if you say something forwards, you can say something backwards.
It's the same forwards as it is backwards.
It's not even really a palindrome, but this one caught my attention. I'm like, people need to hear this.
Is it a palindrome or isn't it?
It's, well, you decide.
Okay.
At the end of this bit, you tell me whether it is or not.
All right.
Okay. First of all, like kayak is a palindrome.
Yes.
And race car is a palindrome. Spelled same for forward and backwards. This isn't about spelling, and for those of you that are watching on YouTube or Rumble, I'm going to put it up on screen. And I couldn't get it really good on screen, but you're going to have to.
Oh, I got to put my glasses on.
Yeah, you're going to have
to
take a look here. This is an atheist view on life. And for you audio listeners, just stay with me and listen to what I'm saying.
Okay.
An atheist view on life. I will live my life according to these beliefs. God does not exist. It is just foolish to think that there is a God with a cosmic plan. That an all-powerful God brings redemption and healing to the world is a comforting thought. However, it is only wishful thinking. People can do as they please without eternal consequences. The idea that I'm deserving of hell because of sin is a lie meant to have me enslaved in those in power. The more you have, the happier you will be. Our existence has no grand meaning or purpose. In a world with no God, there is freedom to live without God. It is ridiculous to think that I am lost and in need of saving.
Mm.
Did you hear all that?
I did.
Did you see all that?
I did,
all right.
Yes.
Let's palindrome this bad boy,
okay.
Should we? And what I mean by that is I'm going to read the exact same words, but this time I'm going to go from bottom to top.
Okay.
Listen to this. This is the Christian's
view on life.
So
they're not necessarily... Each word is reversed, but each phrase is reversed.
Well, I'm going to read it from bottom to top. This is all the right. Christian's view on life, and tell me if this does not ring true.
All right.
I am lost and in need of saving. It is ridiculous to think without God, there is freedom to live in a world with no God. Our existence has no grand meaning or purpose. The more you have, the happier you will be is a lie meant to have me enslaved to those in power.
Mm.
Because of sin, I'm deserving of hell. The idea that people can do as they please without eternal consequences is only wishful thinking. However, it is a comforting thought that an all-powerful God brings redemption and healing to the world, that there is a God with a cosmic plan. It is just foolish to think God does not exist. I will live my life according to these beliefs.
Yeah, that's good.
What do you think of that?
That's really good. I like that. Somebody sat down and thought things out very, very well.
God won't be mocked. And yeah. and what it means to me is using the exact same English language, mm-hmm. just reversing it.
Right.
And reversing some where the emphasis is at times. Mm-hmm. You basically go from a possible atheist view to an actual gospel message.
Right, right.
And to me, with those of us who've been salvaged by God, those of us who have been redeemed, mm-hmm. we now have what the Bible calls eyes to see and ears to hear. We see things and think things differently. It is foolish to think that you're not going to be held accountable for your sins mm-hmm. when you're being created in God's image. He is going to hold us accountable. Here's the good news. I don't have to pay for my sins. Okay, Chris, you just get off scot-free because you're so cool. No, I get off scot-free because Jesus paid the penalty for me as mm-hmm. my substitute. Mm-hmm. And that is what we always want to be about, no matter what.
Right.
And it might be a little bit brief on this Monday. We've got a lot of things going on, but that is the one salvaged by God deep dive that I wanted to do, is just to do that, what I call a long palindrome. And I save your emails. I know it's not a real palindrome, okay? Just work with me on this.
Tony, did you hear that?
Just save it. Make me an offer. I can't understand.
But you know what that it showed me as you were reading it forward and then backward is truth and lies, they do not, they're flowing in opposite directions.
Mm-hmm.
And so clearly one way leads to life and the other leads to death. I mean, there's just no getting around that fact. They are flowing in opposite directions. And the other thing that I was thinking as you were kind of reading through that and getting off scot-free, there is a difference between being forgiven and having consequences. I mean, you are going to have consequences. And I remember one time I had to crawl underneath the studio counter to do something. I don't know what I was doing under that. I'm not an engineer. I don't know. Maybe I dropped a pen. I don't know. But I had to crawl down underneath the studio counter and I was coming back out and I cracked my head going to stand up and I wasn't completely out from under the counter and cracked my head on the bottom of that counter and it hurt. And it hurt for like a couple days. I know that explains a lot.
What studio were we in? Was that in Tucson?
No, that was in Michigan.
In Michigan.
Yeah. And I remember thinking about, I'll never do that again. And as soon as I said that to myself, I'll never do that again, it just clicked. You know, that's what consequences are for. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, even though God offers forgiveness, he still allows consequences. He still allows justice on this earth as well, because his hope is not to crush us, but his hope is that we'll come out thinking, I'll never do that again, you know, learn from your mistakes. And so, but yeah, you are absolutely right. We are forgiven, forgiven, forgiven. That cannot be understated. All right.
What are we doing now?
Let's bring in Mike Shaw.
Let's bring in Mike Shaw. What's happening, Mike?
Hey.
Did you just wake up?
Oh my gosh.
Get that man some coffee.
I need some water. Hey, I wore some green today. I didn't even know. I forgot Sunday was St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, so it's coming.
So if you're watching on the YouTubes or the Rumbles, you can't pinch me.
or punch you.
Or punch me. Thank you. Or that only applies for Sunday. I guess I'll have to wear this until then.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Now, because we know you're Italian.
Yeah.
Do you have any Irish in you as well?
I do.
You do.
So Shaw is a Scotch-Irish name.
It is.
So Scotch-Irish English.
All right.
So the Shaw clan.
Yeah, Shaw doesn't sound Italian.
No.
Yeah.
It's not. It's on my mom's side.
Put two and two together.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm Italian on my mom's side. So I'm half Italian. And then the Shaw is mixed with all kinds of stuff. So
right.
As my grandpa, when my dad went to my mom's father to ask for permission.
Yeah.
Or when they first met, something like that. But anyway, he's like, you know, we're Italian. What are you? And he's like, well, a little German, a little. Oh, you're a mutt. So that's the family joke. So I'm half mutt, half Italian.
All right. Yep. Yeah, I'm quartered up pretty well too. Yep. English and German and, you know.
You're half Norwegian.
Norwegian. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do have a lot of Norwegian.
I guess that's Scotch-Irish.
Our kids all claim to be Norwegian because they are well over three quarter Norwegian.
Chris is 100% and I'm about half. So,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they're good. They're golden. Yeah. Yeah. So I've just realized if I'm Scotch-Irish, I should always be wearing green plaid.
You should. Right. You probably have some. What's that called? They have a plaid that's specific to your family.
Oh, damn. I don't know. Yeah. But yes, I need that.
That's a Scottish thing, right?
Scottish. The coat of arms, our phrase or whatever you call it, our slogan.
Yeah.
He conquers who endures.
Oh,
he conquers who endures.
Sounds miserable, doesn't it? Can it be something like, to the victor goes the spoils, or something cool like that? No. He conquers who endures.
Right. Yeah. A lot of suffering going on.
Yeah, exactly. Hang in there, baby. Thanks.
Our code of honors was we pillage till we're arrested.
Yes. Why can't I have that?
We pillage till we can pillage no more.
We pillage till the cops show up.
Till the authorities show up.
Hey, but here's the thing about the Norwegian culture, because you think about, you know, the Vikings and they were hardy people, very tough people. Uh-huh. They were also very artistic, Norwegians were.
Like, our daughter's very artistic.
Really artistic. And so that was interesting that they were fighters and yet.
Well, that's because it's cold all the time. You got to be inside doing stuff.
Got in touch with their sensitive side with artistic expression.
Well, that's how you unwind after a night of pillaging.
Yes, yeah.
You know,
we just got
back from England. We got all this stuff.
You whittle, you paint.
Now what are you going to do? I'm going to go to Disneyland and then I'm going to draw.
Was that before or after y'all were worshiping the trees? I gotta ask.
Like I said, we're not the smartest people.
You can't walk and chew gum at the same time.
But you know, you made a really good point. You don't really have my German heritage. We have the, you know, we have Martin Luther and, you know, the whole English thing. Well, there was a lot of that going on.
We have Ole and Sven.
Well, we have Christopher Columbus.
That's who we have.
And
we
the
have
Italians
only,
have yeah, Christopher yeah, Columbus. You,
everybody's
yes.
got somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
The Norwegians. We've
well,
got
we have Marco
Sven.
Polo too.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
He brought noodles back to Italy.
From China.
From China.
Yeah.
Well, that's because he's the head of the pool game.
Yeah, it's true. Correct.
All right, right on way off.
That's
Let's
a
get
lot
to
of
it.
Nonsense we crammed in there.
It was pretty good.
All right, so
I know,
yeah,
but
just
I'm still
remember,
proud of my microphone
just,
flag.
Let's
I
just
love it, man.
Let's rehearse
I don't
our
care.
Let's rehearse
it stays.
Our memory verse for the day. I'll remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old. All right, there we go. We're spiritual again.
Boom shakalaka.
Let's carry on. Should we move to right on way off? Are
I think
we ready?
Said, yeah.
We shall.
Yeah, we
all
shall.
Right.
I mean, you're the boss.
Shall. I'm going to keep in St. Patrick's Day theme.
Oh boy.
Here.
Oh yeah. Theme.
Can I be the
Emily
leprechaun?
Theme.
I mean, I'm James the Lesser in the living.
That's right.
So you James would think I'd Lester. Be the leprechaun too.
Leprechaun. Mike the leper.
Of course.
Mike the leper.
Right. Okay. I've been healed by Jesus. So
there you go.
Okay.
And so you are no more. All right. Right. We're gonna start off with this. Chris, you're probably not gonna like this because this is a bit of the true or false rather than the right on way off, but we're playing it right on way off. All right.
All right.
You're just going to
put
on your big boy pants and you're going to deal with it.
All right.
All right. We're starting with you. The first statement, tell me if it's right on or way off. Abraham Lincoln is responsible for corned beef and cabbage becoming a celebratory menu for St. Patrick's Day. Is that right on or is that way off?
I'm going to say right on.
Okay. Why?
I don't know why. Because Abe was just that kind of guy.
Yeah, he freed the slaves.
Yeah.
He united a country after war.
Yeah.
And
he held the union together with corned beef and cabbage. I've always thought that corned beef was like a East Coast thing. Like I don't think it even came over from Ireland. Maybe it did.
I
could
know.
Be way off. But I'm going right on with Abe. I believe that I believe Abe's a thing doer. And this is another one of the things that Abe did with no other evidence.
Maybe
I'm
it was
just
one
go
of
right
his
on.
Presidential promises, huh?
Yeah.
When he was campaigning.
Right.
I don't know.
There'll be corned beef in every kitchen in America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were going to say crock pot, but they didn't have crock pots back then.
I know. But that goes from Hitler's, there'll be a chicken in every pot. That's how he
and
came
that's
to power.
A bad
know your
thing.
History. Make me an offer. that I'm right on about. I'm going right on with A.
Right on with A. All right, Mike Shaw, what do you think? Abraham Lincoln is responsible for corned beef and cabbage becoming a celebratory menu for St. Patrick's Day. Do you think that's right on or way off?
There's no way. It's way off.
Way off.
I have no idea why. I'm just being a contrarian. One of us has to get it right now. So,
all right.
So I'm way off. I mean, Abraham Lincoln is credited for making Thanksgiving a national holiday. Mm-hmm. How many food things can Abraham do? So there's no way.
He was so skinny at the same time.
And so, like, besides that, Abraham Lincoln probably, if he was thinking Irish, he probably would have made haggis a thing. And then we'd all be eating sheep lung. On
well,
Sunday.
I thought it was his brother, Reuben Lincoln, that really brought the corn.
Reuben Lincoln, yes. I think he was his shorter brother, but everyone was shorter than Abe back then. So, yes, Reuben Lincoln. You would think
you have no idea why that's funny, do you, Mike?
I have no idea. Oh, Reuben sandwiches, corned beef. Hello. I just got it. I just got it when you asked me. So you're right. I didn't get it at first. But what I was going to say was corned beef has to be from Iowa. Doesn't it have to be from Iowa? This is where the corn is. You can't have corned beef without Iowa.
Is there corn in corned beef? I don't know.
I don't know how they corn it. I don't know. Do I look like Betty Crocker to you?
Not really. Okay. No. All right. Are we right on or way off?
Let's see. Chris, you said right on.
I said right on.
Mike, you said way off.
No.
And Chris, you are correct. Abraham Lincoln is responsible for making corned beef and cabbage the celebratory menu for St. Patrick. Do you know how it happened? Let me tell you a little story.
I'm guessing Mary got a little bit worked up in the kitchen.
Yep. Threw some corn at and landed in the corn beef.
How did Abraham Lincoln bring corned beef and cabbage to
St. Patrick's
Day? Mary had nothing to do
with it. Lincoln loved corned beef and cabbage. And that was, it got national attention when he had his very first inaugural luncheon. That's what he wanted served.
Okay.
And so everybody kind of took note. I guess word travels fast.
Corned beef done right is phenomenal.
Phenomenal. And phenomenal. He didn't even need social media to get it going. He just
said corned beef needs to be avoided.
Let's have corned beef and cabbage for our luncheon.
And so they did. Was his inauguration as late as March?
Well, his inauguration was 2 weeks before the actual St. Patrick's Day.
Okay. Sometimes the inaugurations were late.
Right. But it also preceded, remember the Great Potato Famine was not all that much before the inauguration. And so there was this influx of Irish immigrants at that time. And it just really caught on. So do you want to hear the menu?
He was running for re-election already at the inauguration. Smart
the menu guy. Of the inauguration lunch?
At Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. It was mock turtle soup, parsley potatoes, blackberry pie, and coffee.
Mock turtle?
With the, I don't know what that is. Pretend
I don't know.
Turtle
but what soup? The thing about turtles is they're the only food that comes with its own bowl.
That's right. Just chop
that's
them up and keep
true.
Going.
That's true.
All right.
I'll say, oh, okay.
Are you having a? Are you okay? I'm in love with corned beef.
Speaking in tongues again, we need an interpretation, or we're going to have to escort you.
Okay.
If we had any budget, we'd stop and edit this.
No,
we don't, so we won't. Let's keep going.
I just lost it, and my mouth would not say what my brain was thinking.
Chris is ahead, 1-0.
Yeah. 1-0.
1-0.
All right, moving on.
Yep.
The proper response to the greeting, top of the morning, to you is, and the rest of the day to yourself. Is that right on or way off? We're going to go with Mike first. Let me say it again because I probably didn't read it very good. The proper response to the greeting, top of the morning to you, which is a very common Irish greeting. The proper response is, and the rest of the day to yourself.
I have no idea. Even though I am Scotch-Irish, you would think my genes would tell me. I'm wearing Wranglers, so it doesn't work. I have no idea, so I'm going to go with right on.
Okay.
I mean, that sounds very... Because I would just say top of the morning to you, too.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
But that
sounds more fancy. I like it. I'm going with it. That's right on.
All right. And the rest of the day to you. And the rest of the day to yourself. Chris, what do you think? The proper response to top of the morning to you is, and the rest of the day to yourself.
I'm going to go right on.
Okay.
Because it sounds just hokey enough to be true. And I looked into a lot of the phrases from both Ireland, Scotland, and England with all of our trips over to that part of the country.
Yeah.
The only word you're missing is governor.
Cheerio, governor.
Top of the morning to you,
top
governor.
Top of the morning, governor.
Cheerio, governor.
Isn't that morning?
And, you know, it just sounds to me like, you know, adding the word yourself on the end
right.
is where it's like, eh, but, you know, the way they do things, I'm going right on.
Yeah, it is right on. That is exactly what they say. And I know it sounds a little bit different, but over there in the Isles, they do speak, even though it's English, it's a little bit different. Like if I was to say that person is kind of a homebody and just keeps to himself, the English will say, well, he keeps himself to himself.
You know? Okay.
Yeah. So they add to yourself and himself and herself.
They drop the word
herself.
The a lot.
They do.
Like, you don't go to the hospital. You go to hospital.
Yeah. Wait
just
a minute.
Go to hospital. No, that's how they say it.
You can finally go to Walmart? It's always the Walmart.
The Walmart.
It's always the Walmart.
Except the Facebook?
Yeah. No, you know, they don't call a trunk of your car a trunk. They call it the boot.
Yes.
Yeah, and under the hood, it's the bonnet.
College is university.
Aluminum is aluminium.
And aluminium, university is just university. There's no the. Yeah.
Right.
She was at university.
She was at university.
Yeah. And they shorten
then she went to hospital.
And they shorten it to uni.
Yeah.
If they talk about somebody's at the university, they're at uni.
And if you hang out over there long enough, you come home and you just start using words you normally, I still to this day use sometimes the word brilliant.
I do too.
Yeah, brilliant.
That's brilliant.
I love that. Brilliant. Let me ask you this.
Cheers.
Let me ask you this. As Americans in London, for example, do they love your accent as much as we love their accent when they're here?
No.
Everything they do, they find it appalling.
Yeah.
Theirs is proper English, and we are just slugs, you know. Everything they do is very proper.
We are overweight slugs who have more money than they do. That's the way they look at us.
But,
in general terms. I'm just being honest. In general terms.
Yeah. And I did find a video, though. I found a video where they took Southern biscuits and gravy and sweet tea and fed it to a bunch of schoolboys.
9 and 10 year old, proper prim, with the jackets
and
the little emblem.
Uniforms and everything. And,
they fed them all kinds of Southern cuisine.
They loved it.
Loved it.
They didn't like the look of it.
They didn't like the look of it. They'd put it in front of them and they're like, this looks terrible. But then they started eating it. And
they didn't understand what a biscuit was, because a biscuit to a child in England is a cookie.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah. Biscuit's a cookie.
Biscuit's a cookie.
And like what we have as a biscuit to them would be a scone.
Yeah.
They think anyway, enough. Enough.
That's good rabbit trail.
Nice rabbit trail.
There's never a rabbit trail. We haven't found that to be exciting.
All right. Last one. Right on, way off. Chris, it is your turn to go first. Dublin is the home of the first St. Patrick's Day parade. Is that right on or is that way off?
Dublin, St. Patrick's
is
Day
the
parade.
Home of the first St. Patrick's Day parade.
I'm going to go way off.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I think it was New York.
Okay.
I think St. Patrick's Day is celebrated on the 17th because that's when he passed away. But I think the Irish in America is what made it big for us. Mm. And so I don't know if they ever even had a parade over there.
Yeah.
I just learned they didn't drive the snakes out either, so what do I know? I'm going to say no, it wasn't
and they had
Dublin.
A potato famine. You're going to say no. Okay.
The reason is because that would be a little too on the nose.
Okay.
And I know how you roll.
Wow. So it really says more about me than about the
Irish. It says you more as a moderator / host than it does about the Irish and their Dublin parades.
Oh, you will be surprised.
I
All
bet
right,
I
Mike
will.
Shaw, yeah. What do you think?
Is it R.C. Sproul?
No, it's a shadow.
C.S. Lewis.
Dublin is the home of the first St. Patrick's Day parade. Right on, way off.
So I'm way off because I'm down 1 point, and the only way to make up that point is to go opposite of Chris.
I went way off.
He said way
off. Oh, you went way off. I'm right on. I'm sorry.
Okay,
I'm
right on.
You're
of
right
course,
on.
Of course. Of course the first parade was in Dublin, in Dublin, Ohio. Of course it was.
In Dublin, Ohio.
Yes, that's where it happened, and it was great.
All right.
And I was there, playing a leprechaun, giving candy to the kids.
Oh, I think Mike did not get enough sleep last night. He's maybe a little goofy today.
I'm right on with that.
All right. Actually, the St. Patrick's Day Parade, the very first one, took place in St. Augustine, Florida.
America.
Yep. So that is where the St. Patrick's Day parades really began.
Okay.
I don't know if
I figured it was an American thing. I don't know
if they don't really do the parades, or if maybe it's more of a somber holiday for them or something.
Well, yeah, I was surprised it was the anniversary of his death.
Yeah.
Because it's honoring, I get that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But usually it's like their birthday.
Yeah.
They pick their birthday.
Well, Valentine too, 14th.
It was the anniversary of his death.
Yeah. A lot of times it's when they died that was.
You know, I'm sitting over here kind of lamenting that I was that harsh about the British people towards Americans. A lot of them are very nice to Americans.
Yeah. I love going there.
And
they just don't think our accents are cool.
There is Americans lack a certain credibility. Does that to Brits?
We have a much more casual culture.
Yeah.
And they're just more prim and proper. Prim and proper. I mean, our grandkids started going to school there.
Yeah.
So in the very early grades, they start teaching children, okay, if you ever are in the presence of the queen or the king or whatever, this is what you have to do.
Yeah.
And they start,
we learned that too,
bow. You don't touch the queen. You don't speak to the queen unless she speaks to you first. You know, there's just this whole litany of proper behavior. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like,
What I said was just kind of, they do look at Americans as being
the casual,
overweight,
lazy,
and they got
the
all this
unwashed
money.
Masses,
yeah,
like of America,
yeah. Anyway,
castaways.
So I thought that the parade wouldn't be in Dublin because a lot of these things have been Americanized,
right?
Including stuff that comes from England, from Ireland, from Italia, from all over the world. Then we Americanize them, and make them our own.
Exactly.
That's what we've done for 250 years. Yeah. America.
Because we're a melting pot. Because, so the Irish kind of bring this recognition of St. Patrick to our country. And it just, I don't think Abraham Lincoln had any intention of making this the official meal for St. Patrick's Day. But we meld together and we are all one American. We're all Americans, and we do. We celebrate with what our countrymen celebrate, and we're sorrowful with the things that make them sorrowful.
Does anyone have any currency on them? Can I borrow a dollar?
You want to show us an Irish thing on the dollar?
Well, just imagine, you guys know this. On your money, it says E pluribus unum. Anybody know what that means?
Out of many, one.
That means you're the one to go buy the salsa.
Yes. Yep, e pluribus unum, out of many, one. And so
it's very blurry.
Yes, but multiculturalism was a trick of the evil one. It's part of how, with the woke, it's one of the things they started with was multiculturalism. It was starting to there were rumblings about it when I was a kid in school in the 70s.
Right.
And, it's kind of where we've gone now you're not American, you're this, that, or the other. America was founded on racism.
Right,
and so
right.
The multiculturalism is part of that deconstruction of America. E pluribus unum.
It is.
We take your huddled masses, your poor, bring them, please. Mm-hmm. But you become an American.
Right.
And you guys know this story from your heritage, I'm sure. We have so many stories in our Italian family of how our Italian ancestors came over in the 20s, my grandma, my grandfather, and they had to learn the language as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. They had to become Americans. They wanted to become Americans.
Right, yeah.
And, it's a little different now, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has unfortunately changed quite a bit. Same with the whole concept of... I've noticed this come really into our culture a lot. I hear a lot in television and media that the benefit or the, I can't even think of the phrase now that I brought it up, but the good of the whole outweighs the good of the individual.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
And oh, dear. That's collectivism.
Collectivism. Yeah. It's so contrary to the reality because the reality is if the individual if the good of the individual is set at the top priority, everybody's top priority.
Mm-hmm.
It equalizes everything and people, humanity become important. But once you sink down into that, the good of the whole or the good of everyone outweighs the good of just one individual person, That is exactly what you said, Mike. And it's what totalitarian regimes use to set themselves up.
To enslave you.
Exactly.
And, you know, a representative republic and the miracle that is the United States of America did put the individual on a pedestal, because all of us have our individual rights that come from God that is recognized, that is core to our beliefs, and that is what they're trying to deconstruct so that they can get to their collectivism where you're just one of their pawns, the elites rule and the peasants drool.
Yeah, there you go.
Where do your rights come from? They come from your creator God. Mm-hmm. You're endowed by your creator. And they can't stand that. And they try to do these workarounds. It's just sad.
Well, it is really sad. And it gets back to what I was talking about at the very beginning, when we secularize something that's very holy. Basic human rights, they are holy. They come from God. And if you want to secularize them, that means that they come from government or they come from the powerful. Well, guess what? If the powerful can give you rights, the powerful can take them away as well. God does not. God is he does not change his view. He is unchanging, and our rights do indeed come from God our Father, and it puts everybody on equal playing field.
Well, we've got a lot of time left in the hour. We try to go at least an hour. You know, we this was a shorter show by design.
Yeah.
But I'd like to use a little bit of the time we have left to do a movie review.
Oh, what movie do you want to review?
Mike, have you ever heard of the movie Cabrini?
No, sounds like an Italian dish, though.
It is Italian.
Yeah, she's Italian.
Cabrini.
The makers
Wait,
of
it's
sound,
a person?
Yeah, it's a person.
It's a person.
Yeah.
It's Mother Cabrini. Oh, and she has a lot of people know the name because there was a famous hospital in New York named Cabrini Hospital. And this is a 2-hour and 45-minute epic picture made by the same director who made Sound of Freedom. And it's a Christian release. And Emily and I got screening tickets to go see it. And this movie is subtly it's off in a way that I kind of want to warn people about. I want people to be astute and discerning. You know what I mean?
Discernment. Yeah.
Yeah. When people go out and they learn how to be discerning, they will see things and they will know things. Now, first of all, before we get into this, because my review of this movie is not going to be great. Okay. Out of 5 stars, I'm going to give it 3. Mm-hmm. Okay. And everybody's bragging about this movie because it's really well done. Look, it's a period piece. It's from the late 1800s, about 1880. In Italy, it starts. And then she comes to New York.
Nice.
And she comes to Five Points in New York, where it's just a slum.
The slums, yeah.
Just an Italian slum. And her and a few of her nun sisters, they start doing incredible work. And the factual things that I've learned about Mother Cabrini since we went to the screening, and even a little bit before we went to the screening, is that she was somebody who I find to be like awesome, like a hero. Like,
she was like a Daniels then.
Yeah, she really was stubborn and yet strong and willing to put herself forward and not take no for an answer. But they've got a story that goes from the 1880s all the way through 1940, okay, when she passed away. And in that time, she did a lot of things. Now, they released it on National Women's Day on March 8th, I think it was, March 8th or 9th.
It was recently, yeah.
And so it came out on Friday. Emily and I got to go see a screening on Thursday night. And to be honest with you, we did not stay for the whole thing. So that's a disclaimer I have to put out there. But with about 35 minutes to go, we
could have
burned
an extra star. You don't know.
Here's what happened. Here's why they lost 2 stars. 1 star was lost because they constantly had white males acting a fool, where they were just putting Mother Cabrini down. They were making it difficult for her. They were saying things that a lot of people in that culture may not have said. And also, number two,
it was rough for Italians at first.
Number two, they made the church, and in this case, the Catholic Church, they made it look like it was mean and that it was spiteful.
Yeah.
And I don't like that, because the Catholic Church back in those days, you can say whatever you want in the new era, but back then, they're not this mean and spiteful in most situations. Now, they had the Pope being played by a guy, an Italian actor who seemed to have a heart. But it seems like everybody in the Catholic Church was against Mother Cabrini moving forward, and they would try to hold her back. And it was just, and then she'd have to persevere through. And then the mayor of New York, played by John Lithgow, by the way.
Oh, cool.
You know, he tries to hold her back and tries to oppress her, and she tries to fight forward. And the lady who played Mother Cabrini, I thought, did a fantastic job, like award-winning acting from this gal. But it was just like, okay, the Monsignor is making it really hard on Cabrini, really hard on Cabrini. Then all of a sudden, he's sitting in the mayor's office, and the mayor wants to make it really hard on Cabrini. And Monsignor there, he's like, oh, we don't want to make it hard on her. And then he turns around, he's really hard on her again.
Yeah,
it has major storytelling flaws because they tried to do too much with the period piece, and they didn't really get to the heart of the matter. And the other part that I'm going to let Emily take over, I'm going to segue to you, Emily, with this. They didn't use the name Jesus Christ at all.
Oh.
And they didn't use scripture at all.
Or, yeah.
It was all Mother Cabrini was the, it was her womanhood, you know, and her entrepreneurial, I'm going to do this. And,
it was human perseverance.
Yes, that's what the word
did
I'm
they do
for.
Any Our Fathers or, no, I'm kidding.
They did a few of these, okay, you know, yeah, but yeah. I mean, they blessed the food was the only prayer.
There was no, yeah. There
but
was,
there was no praying yeah. for people. There was no reaching out to God's word. And I believe
that she did that.
That people did that, sure. you know, because Mother Cabrini was kind of like a forerunner to Mother Teresa. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so anyway, Emily, what was your thoughts on the film?
It was way too long. I could. I just.
That's
I
why we left with 30 minutes left in the picture.
We did watch 3/4 of the movie.
We knew where they were going.
It was cinematography. Absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. But that's why it was so long, because they had to make every single scene just like this creative artwork. So it dragged, you know. But so it was really beautiful. I think that this. Mother Cabrini has an amazing story that I don't think they really told. And I don't think they really told it, not because they didn't portray her as strong as she really was, because there's no doubt about it. She was a strong woman. But she was obviously very, you're going to have to help me with this word, Chris, because I never say it right, entrepreneurial.
Entrepreneurial.
Yes, that word. She had
an entrepreneur.
She had a mind to make things and create things and build things and make it go. She just could do it. Now, the thing about the movie was, I don't know anybody that came alongside her and gladly and willingly helped her.
Just the New York Times reporter.
And he wasn't even. He was coerced into it. Didn't want anything to do with it either. But I'm watching throughout the movie. First, she's in the slums in this just little hole in the wall. But over time, she makes it like really nice for the kids. And it's like, well, somebody had to come alongside her and give to her and help her and do things.
But, well, she had her worker nuns, like 6 of them. So.
Yeah, I understand that. But, you know, you need resources to do those things. So who were the people that did come alongside her and help her?
The Monsignor or whatever reluctantly gave her a check, if you remember. But he said, this is it for the year. Don't ask anybody else.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is that there was no one that, oh, let me help you. Oh, that I'm glad you're doing that. Oh, you know what I mean? There really wasn't any of that. Everything was just very begrudgingly and just, you know. And Chris, when you were talking about how everybody mistreated her and everything, it's mm-hmm. not that they weren't mistreated, because they definitely were, you know. But it was portrayed in a way that probably didn't happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like one scene where the guy, you want to tell that scene?
Certain language just wasn't, you just didn't do it in front of women.
Right.
You just didn't.
And yeah, she was told by one white banker that he would never loan any money to people that look like her or smell like her. That's what he said.
Yeah, just seething. And it's like, you know what? He probably, I'm sure there was a loser banker who turned her away. But they would do it a little more slyly. That's what Satan does. That's how he works. He'll smile at your face while he's backstabbing you.
So the stories I've heard, you know, the stories I've heard of when my Italian ancestors came here early on, there was that kind of prejudice.
Yeah.
You know, the whole the whole WAP thing and, you know,
all the name calling.
And, I mean, the first lynching in the United States was in Louisiana of a bunch of Italians.
Really? Yeah. Yes. I did not know that.
So it's, you know, and the Irish were mistreated. And
Irish were mistreated.
Some
Italians.
Were slaves.
A lot of them.
The Irish slaves. And so, you know, probably what they were trying, and I haven't seen the movie, but I'm just trying to maybe rationalize why they did it that way, was maybe to portray that. And, you know, Chris, as a movie maker, you know, sometimes you'll have to combine things into one
you
scene.
You do. Yeah. You do. It's just like in the book Burdenstone, which is our trip to Spain, which is over Emily's left shoulder. Like, we met 21 people. We journaled. I journaled 21 people that I met on that journey. And then we condensed them down into six characters. And then we had things that had happened. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, spoiler alert, in the book, towards the end, I learned back in America, my car gets stolen. My car never got stolen. It represents like six other things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so in that, they really did a good, they made a good attempt at trying to show how Italians in 5 points in that world, historically accurate, were completely mistreated.
Right.
Yeah.
But what they did is they never allowed anybody else to mistreat people other than white males. And that's what got me.
But back then, that's who was in power.
And I know. I know. But what I'm saying is that it was just kind of over the top, if that makes sense.
It made all
I don't know. They missed the mark on it. Go ahead.
I know what you're saying.
It made all of America look like a hellish place to live.
Oh, yeah.
All of it.
Well, so I hear your point, Emily, because it kind of was for new immigrants. But, but I mean, the Italians, first of all, they had the Italian neighborhood.
Right.
So they all supported each other. And usually they were right next to the Jewish neighborhood.
Right.
Yep.
And then there were other neighborhoods around. And
yeah.
And so the people in the neighborhoods actually tended to get along.
Right.
And you did have allies who would help you.
You did. That's what I was looking for. Right. I wasn't there to say bad things didn't happen.
Right.
I was there to say, where were those God moments where he provided? And who did he provide through? And what did he do? All of that was gone. And like Chris said, there was no prayer. There was one scripture verse that she did quote that was, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. He said him, the Jesus' name was never mentioned.
Really?
God was
in
never
the
mentioned.
Two and a half, in the little over 2 hours that we were there.
I'm shocked.
Now,
about
maybe
that
they
me
did.
Me too.
At
That's
the
why I'm
end.
Bringing it up.
Yeah,
maybe
no
they did at the end. I don't know. But after 2 hours of waiting, my popcorn was gone.
If they didn't say Christ there, then where are they going to?
And so it really, the movie really centered around just the intestinal fortitude of man rather than,
in this case, a woman.
A woman just depending on God.
Yeah. It was about the human. It was about the human condition persevering through a strong woman who really deserves to have her story told. And I think she deserves to be looked up to because she did some great things.
No doubt.
But what I saw in this Christian film by Christian filmmakers was I saw them soft and lean towards trying to make right with the Hollywood culture of the day.
Yeah.
Now, the Oscars were this past weekend.
Yeah.
And Oppenheimer took home everything from what I understand. I won't watch it ever again because of the rules that they have in place now. To even be nominated for an Oscar, you have to have all these check marks, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what it reminds me of, and this is the big spiritual point I'd like to make about why I brought up Cabrini, is because it's a good movie.
Right.
It's not a bad movie.
It's a great story to be told.
And it's a great story that needs to be told. But again, once you start to shave the edges off of truth, once you start in anything Christian walk, anything Christian journey, you start to do that, you can't go far enough fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you will find, you know, you couldn't say the name Jesus. Nuns couldn't say the name Jesus in a story about the greatest nun to come to America. And other than Mother Teresa that I know of in the last 150 years.
Right.
And so here's my point. Once you go soft, you can't go soft enough for them. You will I've been called abrasive.
Appeasement does
not
work.
Yeah. You try to, I call it pouring sugar. you know, I don't want to be abrasive. And so I try to pour some sugar. I can't pour enough sugar no matter what I do. I'm they can still find fault with me. Right. And the same thing goes when people go woke. Mm-hmm. When anybody goes a little bit woke, you're never woke enough. And it'll just continue on and on and on. And so I want Christians to open their eyes to what they see around them, and especially when it comes to like filmmaking, that we still have a need for some strong Christian filmmakers who aren't going to try to muddy the waters mm-hmm. in order to try to sell more tickets, that they'll actually tell a story that needs to be told right. the right way.
Well, so if you're a Christian filmmaker and you want to tell a story that gives glory to God.
Right. If you really want people to know how Cabrini did what she did,
yeah,
you yeah. can't cover up God. Yeah. You can't cover up God, because here's a woman. She apparently traversed the ocean like 24 times.
What? Wow.
And back and forth from Italy to the U.S. She was as far out as like Colorado.
Yeah, she did setting some stuff
up,
out there.
Setting up, you know, facilities for people in desperate need.
She did have help.
Yeah, whether it was hospitals or orphanages or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So that's what was lacking was... You know, I came away, we were reading a piece on what the makers of the movie wanted the takeaway to be. And they wanted the takeaway to be that, yeah, it was so hard and it was so difficult that people will really want to step in and change things. I got to be honest, coming away from that movie, it's like, I'd never do that. It was awful, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you would have given me those breathers, if you would have given me when it was really, really hard, here's how God came through.
Yep.
When it seemed impossible, here's how God made it possible. And these are the people that loved what she was doing. These are the other people that cared about the children. These are the other people that came alongside her. I would have been more compelled to say, yeah, let's keep doing that.
The reason, you know? I'm shocked is that Sound of Freedom made $200 million or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I thought the director then would have some clout to be able to make the movie that he wanted to make.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times what happens, and people don't know this, they unless they've been behind the curtain, they don't understand that in the Christian industry, the idea of putting forth Jesus Christ in the full gospel message is mm-hmm. frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
It's frowned upon. I'll give you an example. Todd Agnew wrote a song called Higher Ground. That song is now published, but he could not put it on the last album he was doing when we hung out with him. We were his MCs for a concert and hanging out with him in the backstage. And Todd Agnew is just one of those great guys. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's one of the good ones that mm-hmm. wants to just love people, serve Jesus. And he wrote a song called Higher Ground. And it was actually called Tableland when he was singing it at this concert. And he didn't tell the whole audience everything, but he told us pretty much the whole story behind the scenes. And that is, the record company said they did not want him to record it.
Mm-hmm.
They did not want it because it did not pass the muster. And what passes muster for Christian recording with a lot of people, a lot of record companies, between the years 2000 and 2015, when we kind of knew what were going on, is that you got to reduce Jesus down to just God is love. You know, you just got to keep reducing it down. Well, Todd Agnew fought to get this song recorded. He eventually got it recorded, but there's a major change in it. And that is this. At the end of the song, Todd Agnew stops playing all instruments and just with his voice sings the chorus. And it's so powerful that he got a standing ovation that lasted like 2 minutes, 3 minutes. It was almost like a Saddam Hussein kind of standing ovation, you know, where they're not allowed to quit clapping. It was one of the most powerful moments of any Christian concert I've ever been in. You were there.
Yeah,
I
was.
Wrong?
It was very powerful.
Well, yeah. They would not let him do that, because when he finally recorded it and it came out and I heard it, I'm like, oh. Now, here's the thing. What I'm about to tell you, it sounds really good. It is a qualified version of the song. But what they do is they switch to Todd singing to a, it sounds like a African-American church choir mm-hmm. singing that last chorus of Higher, look it up, Todd Agnew, Higher Ground. Download the song for $1. And you will be blessed by the whole song. But at the end, just imagine Todd Agnew singing that song, singing that chorus by himself at the top of his lungs as if his life depended on it. That's powerful. And yes, the choir was powerful too, but it had to be there because the industry told him it had to be there. I know that for a fact because we were there. Cabrini and other Christian films are starting to do the same thing. You're starting to see it. You're starting to see how the edges are being shaved off, and you know why. Because when you go from this group of people to this group of people, and I'm talking about people who claim Christ, this denomination, all the way across, they want to reach as many of them as they can. Why? Because, excuse me.
Bless you in advance.
So, Gesundheit.
There you go.
I'll just go to Emily's camera, Quebec. Why?
And we're
because
back.
They're a business. Yeah. And a business is in business to do what?
Make money.
And so the Christian industry continues to disappoint. And that's what I look at Cabrini as, is a great movie that they screwed up trying to be part of the Christian industry. Yes, and what would your final thoughts be on that movie?
Yeah, I think that they had a really good start and a really great premise and a story that could have just been the epic movie of the year. But it got lost. It got lost in human effort for me. It got lost in human effort when they didn't even quote the full scripture. There was no prayer. There was no mention of God. There was no mention of Jesus. It was all her intestinal fortitude. That's depressing for me. That's not inspiring. And so maybe somebody else will like it. I don't know. And maybe there was a big shock at the end. But I just want to encourage you that, you know what? Look up the story of the woman's life. See what's documented and all the stuff that she did. We have the internet now. We can do that. And I bet you just reading about her will be way more inspiring.
Did I make sense in my analogy, by the way?
That
it's really more about the Christian industry and filmmaking, storytelling, let me down than it is about the Catholic Church or anything like that. Yep. You know? Yep.
Well, I was reading a review on the movie, and they were talking about how great the movie was. And if you recognize the director's name, it's because he was also the one that did that fiasco of a movie, Sound of Freedom, the ridiculous movie, Sound of Freedom.
And that incredibly right-wing conspiracy Sound of Freedom.
Are you kidding me? So
no, that's how they talk about it.
Can't really win for making Sound of Freedom, and he can't really win for making Cabrini. I wish they just would have brought in the reality of God, because that's really what the story's all about.
Isn't that
all
what Paul said?
Yeah.
Paul said, it's like, I've become all things to all people that I might win some, but it's the power of the
God.
Cross.
Yeah. The power of the cross. Yeah.
That's salvation for those that are being saved.
There's still one movie that stands above all movies as far as authentic storytelling, staying true to the story as much as they possibly can.
What's that?
Passion of the Christ.
Oh, yep. That was good, yeah.
And that was made by Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
Because he knows how to tell a story, and he knows how to tell it authentically.
And he had that passion to keep it, to keep God at the center.
Yeah.
And to keep what really happened.
It doesn't even have to be all God all the time. But, I mean, to me...
repent.
One of the most striking stories that reflects the gospel of Jesus Christ is the story of Les Mis.
Yeah.
Written by Victor Hugo. I think it's Victor Hugo.
Still haven't seen it.
He's a prisoner.
Jean Valjean.
Yeah. And he escapes and he seeks refuge in a Catholic church. And then he's going to leave and he steals candlesticks because, they're just let out of prison. They have nothing.
Right.
And then the police, I think, capture him outside of the church, running away.
And the police is Jean Valjean.
And so he drags him back to the church and opens up his bag and shows the priest that he stole all these candlesticks or whatever. And the priest just says, "Oh no, it's okay. I gave those to him."
Mm-hmm.
It was a covering of sin.
Nice.
And that, what that priest did, changed him. He was a different man from that point forward. From that point forward, he was an upright man, just desired to do good, do the right thing, even looking after Cosette, the little girl that he raised, and so on. And it's a beautiful story. It's a real story. It's partly based on reality during the French Revolution. And yet there is, even though the author's not a Christian, the gospel message is still told. And so anytime you tell a good, real story, there's something in there that you can connect the dots and see God at work.
Especially redemptive stories.
Redemptive stories, exactly. We don't know how to tell those anymore, but that's okay. That's a whole nother show.
If you want to burn another hour, ask me about what happened to storytelling in film.
No, let's move to final thoughts. All right. Mike Shaw, what do you think?
Well, so I just love today's topic. We were talking about St. Patrick, and we were talking about different, you know, different groups have their different person who came and preach the gospel and, mm-hmm. and are famous for that. And I was thinking about the Italians, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we talked about Christopher Columbus, which is now boiled down to either Indigenous People's Day.
I thought you were going to say indigestion.
Kind of that, too.
The left gets indigestion when you bring up Christopher Columbus.
Yes, exactly. And
so it's become an Italian holiday.
Right,
you know, it's
right.
not even a national holiday.
Yeah.
Anymore. And then Marco Polo, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, the Mexicans have Cinco de Mayo, which is a victory over France mm-hmm. at a battle of St. Puebla or something.
Okay.
But then I remembered. Paul brought the gospel to the Italians. Mm-hmm. The book of Romans was written to the Romans.
Exactly.
He landed in Syracuse, Sicily, where my grandmother's from.
Oh, wow.
And he went right up the coast through Naples, where my grandfather's from. And,
and he landed at Puteoli.
I bet you Paul met some of your ancestors.
I
bet he did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet he did.
He probably did. They have a statue of Paul in Syracuse, Sicily. In the town square.
Okay.
And so I guess Paul is the Italian St. Patrick. But
yeah, there you go.
Anyway, so I thank you for all of that. I have more to celebrate this Sunday.
There you go. Yeah. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody.
There you go.
All right. What do you think, Chris?
Well, Salvaged by God is a YouTube channel, and it is also a podcast wherever you get podcast content. It's just my sermons. I just finished the Salt and Light series. Mm-hmm. And I am going to be moving now to Passion Week and to the cross and to the Resurrection Sunday. And I just think that it's time to like bring a little bit more hope. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so this coming Sunday, I want to talk about Passion Week. And you're like, well, Chris, Palm Sunday is not for another week after that. I know. But Palm Sunday, I really want to talk about the cross. Because we don't have a Good Friday service here or anything like that. And so then Sunday, on Easter Sunday, guess what the text is going to be? Just take a wild guess.
I don't know. You got to tell me.
The empty tomb.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so.
He is risen indeed.
Yeah. He is risen indeed. I love that.
Well, what's the text, though?
The text will be from one of the Gospels with the empty tomb. Maybe all three of them.
How about the one where John
book,
is faster
chapter,
than Peter?
Book, chapter, verse. I thought that's what you were looking for. Sorry.
You'll rewrite it, Mike, to James the Lesser was faster than both of them.
That's right. It's true. When he was younger.
When he was younger. But no, so here's my point about that, is that Passion Week is when he rides in on the donkey and the palm leaves and all that. For you know, we call it Palm Sunday because it's such a big thing. Mm-hmm. But what happens from Sunday all the way through to Thursday when they have the final supper, mm-hmm. the last supper, and then with the arrest and then the crucifixion on Friday. It is so incredible before the betrayal, before the last supper. What Jesus does in that time is so astounding. I want people to look at it because there's a ton of hope mm-hmm. in there. Because Jesus is telling everybody what's what. He's teaching in the temple. He's establishing the fact that this is going to free everybody, and it's going to put basically a lot of the Jewish hierarchy into the ranks of the unemployed if he is, in fact, the Messiah.
Right.
And there's just so much rich stuff there. And then, of course, the cross, the sacrificial death as our substitute, taking our death penalty on himself. And last year, I did 7 miracles of the cross.
Yep.
And I was asked if I would be willing to do that again. And it's like, I'm not big on repeating sermons within the first 2 years of my time somewhere. But there's so many miracles at the cross that I don't want to miss that. And then, of course, Resurrection Sunday is a standalone. It's what you look forward to every year. Mm-hmm. To me, it's the biggest Sunday of the year. It trumps Christmas Day because that's victory over death, hell, and the grave, and we don't have to fear at all.
Yeah.
So that's what's coming up. But if you need to be encouraged, if you need to be lifted up, go back to Salt and Light, wherever you get podcast content, or on YouTube, Salvaged by God. We don't have a Rumble channel yet, but we're going to...
That's your mic saying you've talked enough.
we're gonna try to get a Rumble
That's
channel.
Funny.
Yeah.
All right.
Are you guys messing with me with this microphone? Is that what you're doing?
I don't have that
no,
kind
but
of
here
power.
Comes this cane into the picture to yank you out.
All right, I'm done. Go
ahead. That's gonna do it for the show. Share a little Share a little St. Patrick's celebration with the people in your sphere this Sunday, and don't forget to share the truth. And we will be back here at Fresh Road Media with No Apology with Emily and Chris next week. Thanks for joining us.